where nothing is taken seriously.
Hi, welcome. This podcast is a part of Down the Rabbit Hole Pavilion for the Wrong Biennale, and it's a space for the kinds of conversation that usually happen off mic after openings or during installations. Across this series, we're bringing together practitioners from the pavilion and the camera and institutionings to talk about how artistic research, spatial thinking, and alternative institutional formats are reshaping how exhibitions come into being within the context of the digital. Today's episode is the first in a series exploring the body as architectural space. We're joined by Guy Ben-Ari and Nathan Thompson, whose collaborative project, Revivification, reimagines performance, sound, and learning in vitro brain interacting with resonant architectural environment. I'm also joined by Suruchi Pawar, a longtime collaborator and head of programming for the Pavilion. Guy, Nathan, and Suruchi, thank you for being here today. To begin with, I'd like to go back to where this project really starts.
I'll start, Nathan. I don't think that the project was ever to do with continuation of Alvin's work. You know, there's a lot of threads and a lot of starting points. You know, I think that the starting point of the project was really his work from 1965, Music for Solo Performer, where he used his alpha waves, his brain waves, to control a sonic environment and basically eliminated his body and focus the attention to the cognitive labor. In Revivification, we're not trying to imitate or replicate Alvin's style. Revivification started as a project in a conversation with Alvin during the years of the 2021, during the Corona time, where we thought about a new project. And during this time, Alvin was 89 years old then, and along those meetings, those weekly or biweekly, fortnightly meetings that we had, we could really see some sort of a decline in Alvin's health. And it was very clear to us all, including Alvin, that, you know, his end is close. He was very sick. And having it interacting with an architectural space, in my mind, Alvin looked at the architectural space as another instrument within these kind of compositions. It's not just a space that you set in, but it was a place that almost helped tune and affect the physical phenomena, the sonic phenomena that were unfolding in the space. And this is what we did in this in Revivification. We created a system that just is ever-changing and ever-growing and ever-developing and creating sound or soundscapes or creating some sort of work within a confined space where the viewers, this architectural space, and the instrument itself or the sonic environment are constantly interacting.
The other thing is that Alvin, his work always forced people to be patient. And he wanted, and I think it's since he started his career, many people have understood, other artists as well as musicians, composers, have understood that that's very important. To set up a system or a location or some kind of facility where people are allowed to be patient or are given the invitation to bring their perceptions outside of their previous preconceptions.
Thank you. I wanted to touch upon what is in your main document, but also something that you have spoken to me about in previous conversations we've had is around the notion of creativity. And I've been working with the writings of this British-French neurobiologist, Samir Zeki, who is also the founder of a much contested field called neuroaesthetics, wherein he defines creativity, particularly in the arts, as a cerebral extension of the brain's quest for knowledge. And in your project, one of the questions that have, I would believe, driven maybe the creation process, but also how you've analyzed the findings, is that can creativity exist outside of the body, and what happens to an artist's creativity once they have passed away? Is this something that the two of you can speak a bit more about, especially now that you've seen the piece sit in a space for a longer duration, as opposed to your previous works, which were more durational performances of over a couple of hours?
There's this idea of donated material being non-living, for example, or this donated material could be not have any rights, and this donated material not actually have any connection to the donated person or the donor person. So it was really important that we give the organoid as much agency as possible in order for us to explore culturally, creatively, and artistically what is possible with this living bioengineered entity. So it's very easy for us when we're sitting in a scientific situation where we're just using these organoids to produce an artwork. And then when we're sitting on the cultural building side as artists, it's very important for us to talk about the importance of experience and particular moral situations on how these organoids are treated. So we're very fortunate, and Guy and I are very privileged, along with Matt and Stewie, of course, in the situations that we found ourselves with dealing with these kind of materials and dealing with these machines and these institutes and the places where we work and show these things. It's very unique, and not many people have this opportunity where we can use scientific tools radically to talk about deep things in the cultural sphere. So when thinking about the agency of these organoids, and in particular this work being a donated material from a famous creative composer, we wanted to explore what creativity really is, or where does it come from? Not really explore, but we wanted people to think about these possibilities. That can a donated brain organoid from a famous composer have some kind of link to its donor? Is there some kind of filament of memory that this organoid has from the donated blood running through Alvin when he was alive? You know, so these things are not measurable, of course, with science. And this is great when we think about it, that you know, we can talk about these things in an artistic way, but they're still real. But alongside that, we want to expand this moral circle. The idea that a lab somewhere can use organoids and dispose of them quickly is just as horrifying as, say, you know, it could potentially be just as horrifying as you know, the way that seal pups were killed in the 40s and the 50s. You know? Now, we think about people bludgeoning seal pups as horrific. But back then, it was normal. So when we think about these things, I'm not supposing that's what's happening in a moral sense, but there's this proposal of thinking about where we are now and what we can measure with the tools that we have now. And in our artistic process, we're proposing a potential to see the value in things that are immeasurable at this point of time. Of course, being creativity is one of the things that are very poignant in this landscape now with AI, and disembodied cognition is right there, right? So disembodied cognition is not only a biological thing, it's also disembodied cognition is now something that we think is happening in the digital realm as well. So we wanted to distinguish this work in some ways, and we believe that the creative process is a biological process. And so what's existing in this artwork is we have this organoid situated on an interface that is connected to the outside world. And this interface is essentially the sensing mechanism of the organoid. So this interface extends out into the world and gives the organoid information of the outside world. Particularly in revivification, there's the microphones behind each panel, sense the acoustic environment in that particular area, and then sends back information, the stimulations back to the organoid. So the organoid is having stimulations put into it. The organoid has an internal stimulation system or process happening. And we could look at that as, say, some kind of lived experience, some kind of subjective internal life. So when we think about this interface putting information in the organoid, and then this same interface is taking the information out of the organoid and sending that and making action into the world. So this idea of having a subjective experience or an internal life and then there's some computation happening. And again, we're working in this area where science is unable to do this. And as creative makers and cultural builders, we're unable to give definite answers. But what we want to do is to propose the question to people to think about how it is possible for this organoid, this living and bioengineered entity, to take action into the world that is related to its stimulation input. So this is subjectivity and action, which is the core foundation of creativity. So almost any living entity that is living in the world has this, you know, this enactment. So that there's this, the enactivism is where you're living in the world, you're changing the world around you, and as a feedback response, you're changing your internal perception of it. So your perception is changing the way that the world is delivered back to you.
It's very complicated. You know, I mean, first of all, I think that it's interesting to talk about authorship in terms of the work that Nathan, Stuart, Matt, and myself are producing, where you ask about who's the creator, you know, and where is the artwork as well? Is the artwork is the sound piece that is generated in the gallery the artwork? Or is it the system that we created that generates it? Or is it all of the above? And then again, who owns the rights to the piece that is then played or generated or created within the gallery space? I think that those are questions that are quite interesting. And I don't think that there are any legal about who owns the sound piece. I don't think that there are legal precedents that would cover issues to do with authorship of biological matter, or in our case, authorship by surrogate performers. The funny thing was that with Self, that's an anecdote, we sent Self to the WA West Australian Music Award competition. We enrolled in there, and in the kind of artist section, I wrote Self. And then they came back to me and said, yeah, but who is the artist? And I said, Self is the artist. And I said, yes, but we need a human. And I argued, I asked them, why? Why do you need? I mean, that's the entity that created the piece that you're judging. I didn't do it. Nathan didn't do it. You know, we didn't do it. It is this biological entity.
Thank you. It's really a shame that we don't have much longer for the conversation today. But for our listeners, the shorter version of the podcast will be available on Anticamera's website at their Radio Anticamera, while we will also be presenting the longer uncut version on the Down the Rabbit Hole Pavilion, including probably the jibes and the comments that all of us have made during this conversation. Thank you, Nathan and Guy, for being here today. This was hopefully the start of what we are imagining to be a 3-year collaboration. So we will see you on the other side.